Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Perspective on Legal Footballing. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Swirl. And I am still just a dude.
Still dude.
Yep. I should just leave the still out because it ain't ever going to change. I mean, about the only thing I could add to that is someday, hopefully, maybe 20 years from now, I'll add retired dude.
And retired.
Retired and retreaded.
Yeah, well, I probably won't add anything else to mine because I don't know what else. I don't have any more time in the day, so.
Well, you'll be an executive judge or something, a high up superior judge, something, the head judge.
Head judge?
Head judge.
Yeah, but
you judge heads.
Well, I do dabble in phrenology.
Yeah, my dad could use you because he always called us not heads. What do you think this one says? I don't know. Let me read it.
Tell you what, that's a term you don't hear thrown around too much these days. Knothead, yeah.
My dad used it all the time.
Did he?
Yeah. You knotheads, get up here and eat your dinner.
Or down in the basement playing pool.
Yeah, or whatever. We were knotheads, whatever we were doing. But it was better than when I got older at the railroad. They thought my middle name was Dammit. Tommy Dammit!
Didn't you have a cat named that or something, too?
No, but the parakeet we had, it learned how to talk, and one of the first things it said was, Tommy Dammit! Tommy Dammit! And that didn't come from me.
Right.
So you know who taught it that.
Yeah, Mary.
Yeah, your sister. That parakeet would say that all the time. He'd go, Tommy Dammit! Tommy Dammit!
I knew you had some sort of pet with some sort of propensity for cursing.
Yeah, the parakeet would curse me out.
Well, on today's episode, we wanted to talk about something that a lot of us have, and quite a few of you might be using it right now as you listen to this show.
Heads? Are we still talking about being a head judge?
No. Oh. Not using your head.
Oh, okay.
Your iPhone.
Oh, yeah. We all have them. We all love them.
Most people have iPhones. Some people have different kind of Android-based phones.
Right.
And I was actually on the Android kick forever, and I was a late adapter of the iPhone. I was all about my Android, but I switched over eventually, and so now I've joined the evil empire as well. I have an iPhone.
Well, I went right from my flip phone to an iPhone.
Straight from the flip phone to the iPhone?
Yeah.
That sounds like a rap song.
From the flip phone to the iPhone, we got all the phones. Phone home now, E.T.
Yeah, I don't think E.T. was using an iPhone. Well, he had his finger out like he could be swiping.
He did. He did. He was using an iPhone. It was an interstellar phone or interterrestrial or something.
Well, Apple recently made the news again, and we're going to get into that a little bit later.
They make a lot of news.
They were fined $27 million by France for intentionally slowing down their older phones and not warning consumers about it. So the French watchdog is the DGCCRF, which stands for Directorate General for Competition, Consumption, and Fraud Prevention.
That sounds like a grand title.
It is.
That sounds like they got a lot of power to cover a lot of things.
And that is France's Competition and Fraud Watchdog, which you might have guessed from their name, which basically says exactly the same thing.
Yes.
And they fined Apple because they said that Apple's customers were not warned that Apple was throttling the speed of their phones as they grow older. Apple said that they did this to try to increase the lifespan of the phones, namely the battery, so you could actually use them longer. So that was their whole excuse, is that we're slowing them down so the battery doesn't get depleted as quickly.
Yes, because they say they need instantaneous power.
Yes.
And it's a weak battery can't supply instantaneous power, so it's protecting your phone.
Yeah. So I actually opened up this article I was looking at, I actually opened up my phone to see what my battery capacity is, because there's a place you can do that.
I did the same thing.
Did you?
Yeah, I saw that. And that you go to battery in your settings.
Yeah, you go to settings, and then you scroll down to battery, and then you click on battery health, and it tells you what your maximum capacity is.
What was yours?
I'm 83%.
I'm 97%.
Oh, you must have a newer phone than me.
I don't know. My phone is like an 8.
Yeah, mine's a 7.
Oh, well, yeah, then it's newer.
Yep.
Yep. And it even gives you all kinds of charts and graphs on how you used it in the last 24 hours, and it shows you your charging rate and everything.
I've seen that.
Yeah. So I don't know what you're going to do with all that information, but it does tell you if your battery's healthy because, you know, batteries, rechargeable batteries do wear down.
They do. I'm sitting at, I guess, a low B as far as the grade for my battery. You're sitting at an A still.
Well, that's what I thought. It said 97, and it said your battery is good for normal use. And I thought, 97 should be better than just normal. I should be above average at 97. That's an A in school where I come from.
Well, where most people come from, actually.
But it just seemed to be like, okay. They wouldn't give me a great or anything. Your battery health is great. It was just good enough.
Well, my battery is currently performing or supporting normal peak performance as well at 83%. So.
Yeah, well, so it was mine at 97. That's the way they described it.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, anyway.
I think it should be able to blast off at 97%.
Apple reached an agreement with the DGCCRF. I just like spitting out those acronyms. And as part of the agreement, they have to put a notice on the French website where they sell their phones to make sure everyone knows. And it says that Apple committed the crime of deceptive commercial practice by omission. That's what they did. Because what they were doing is that they were doing this. They were throttling back these performance on these phones, but they weren't telling people about it.
Oh, yeah. They do a lot of stuff like that.
Regardless if they were doing it for the right reasons or not, they didn't tell anybody.
Right.
If you buy these phones, you have the right to understand what they're doing to your phone.
Well, and let's be clear. That was the excuse they used to try to get out of it, but they were trying to force you to buy another phone.
Well, this phone's going slower than I need a new phone. This one's getting old. It's going slowing down.
Right.
And they confirmed that they've been using this practice since at least 2017. And as we said, they only start to do this once the battery starts to decline. And they said they are starting to provide clearer information to customers to let them know when the performance management has been switched on so customers won't be shocked. And they also said that due to technological increases, it will be even less noticeable on future models.
Oh, yeah. If you buy a new one, they're telling you how good it is. Well, that's one of the other things that they have been under attack for in the past is planned obsolescence.
Yeah.
They have built in their plan, they're going to make your phone obsolete, so you have to go get a new phone.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you want to or not, you could be satisfied with the performance of your phone, but they're going to do something to cause it to stop working, so you have to go get one.
I don't have a problem with obsolescence as long as it's due to technological increases and something that is better that you want to actively pursue, not something that they're making it so it will actually become obsolete at a certain point.
But you know what? There are people out there that even though they have an iPhone, they don't do much more than maybe text or make and receive phone calls.
Uh-huh.
They don't do all the other stuff that a lot of people live on their phone. Some people don't live on their phone, so they could have an older phone and it still texts and calls just fine. So it's not fair to them if you undercut their phone so it won't work anymore, and that's all they want to do. And their experience, they're not gaming on it and things like that you need all that.
All I want to do is text, make phone calls, look at Facebook, and play Words with Friends. That's all I want to do.
Well, I mean, like my dad has an iPhone, but all he does is make calls. That's it, and receive calls. He doesn't text. He doesn't look at it for anything. He doesn't do anything. He just uses it for phone calls.
Does he carry it with him everywhere he goes?
He must not, because there are times where I call and I don't get an answer, and I wait about 10 minutes, and the phone rings, and he goes, well, I heard it ringing, but I couldn't get to it.
he has a receiver in his house, so he sets it on.
That's just like his computer. He's got a computer there, but I said, Dad, when was the last time you've been on that computer? I don't remember. I said, well, why are you still paying for cable? Why are you still paying for your internet if you're not using that?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I don't know. It might come in handy sometime. I said, how? You don't know how to use it anyway.
That's funny.
But Apple has often been accused of planned obsolescence, the idea that it deliberately manufactures its devices so that they seem obsolete before this is the case, typically with the intent of selling a new and improved version. A class action lawsuit alleging planned obsolescence in the iOS 9 update was filed in New York State in December of 2015. An online petition created by consumer group Some of Us in July 2016 accused Apple of sabotaging devices with software upgrades designed to slow down older models. Another Some of Us petition that reached over 300,000 signees in September 2016 accused Apple of planned obsolescence by removing the standard headphone jack in the iPhone 7.
Yeah. So, well, supposedly the reason for that was that the headphone jack was not impervious to water, whereas the other one is. So if you have a headphone jack, it goes underwater, you're in trouble. If you have the new one, you stick it underwater, you're okay.
But still, the consumer should be able to decide if they want to do that or not. Don't make my phone shut down so I have to buy another one. If I'm willing to take the water risk on my headphone jack, then I should be able to.
I disagree with you there, because they're making, that's how they're actually producing the phone. So I don't see that as planned obsolescence. They're trying to technologically make it a better phone by getting rid of the headphone jack.
Some people don't want a better phone.
Well, they can buy an old one then.
Well, I know, that's what I'm saying, but not when they make the old ones quit working. I'm not saying you should have the option of buying a new one with or without the jack.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that if you own one already and they make that upgrade, say, we're not going to have that anymore, and then they do something to make your phone shut down, because they can send these waves. I don't know how all that works.
I want to make my iPhone rotary. These things to your phone. I want a rotary iPhone.
Well, I hate that ring. That old-fashioned telephone ring that a lot of people, it's usually people my age.
Yeah.
It's like, I hear that and I want to say, okay, boomer.
I don't use a ringer at all. I don't know how people have ringers. Mine's constantly on silent. Like, really? I don't use a ringer.
Well, I do use a musical tune.
Do you?
For mine, yeah. That way, whenever I hear it, I know who's calling me.
Not me. I'm a 100% vibrate person.
Huh. Well, that's good for you, I guess. But Apple subsequently announced that through most of 2018, it would offer battery replacements at a discounted price. Normally, they were selling them for $29, whereas normally they were $79 when you replaced a battery out of warranty.
Yeah, that was their way of kind of
making up for
making
this.
Up for it.
Yeah, because they got caught is what happened. So they offered this as a way out of it, because that's a cheaper alternative, because they probably get those batteries for like a nickel. So $29, that's still a good profit.
Probably so. Now, the one thing I wanted to talk about, the French connection issues.
The movie?
the fine. So they were fined $27 million. And if you look at their profits, that's about the time it takes. They make that money in 3 hours, basically.
They're unbelievable, and they pay no taxes.
So they were fined
very
for 3 taxes. Hours of their profit.
Yeah.
Which is a drop.
Which was nothing.
That is absolutely a drop in the bucket.
It didn't. Fines, the purpose of fines, if I understand them right, is to deter people from doing something again because they don't want to have to pay that money. But for them, it doesn't matter. It's just like they said about Bloomberg. If Bloomberg spends, what did they say, $500 million on the election to try to get elected president, he will still be richer after the election than he was before it started.
Oh, because he's making more money?
Yeah, because his money comes in so fast.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
Somewhere.
Means nothing.
I don't know where.
It's just like water.
Well, now there's some other class action lawsuits that Apple had, but before that, I think there's going to be some motion before the court today.
Why, yes, if it pleases your courtship, we would like to approach the bench and pay for court costs.
My courtship? Who am I, Eddie's father?
Yeah. People, let me tell you about my best friend. He's my one boy cuddly toy, my up, my down, my pride, my joy.
Was that the theme song from that show?
Yeah. You don't remember that?
No, I just was able to name drop.
People, let me tell you about him. He's so much fun, whether we're talking man to man or whether we're talking sun to sun.
When did that show come out?
Oh, it had to be the late 60s, maybe early 70s.
Oh,
I'd say more like late 60s.
So I probably caught that on reruns on TBS after school or something.
Yeah.
I don't even know that I ever watched that show. I just know the name.
You know
of
who
it.
The dad was? I'll give you a hint. He was later the Incredible Hulk.
Lou Ferrigno?
When that wasn't Lou Ferrigno, that's who he turned into. But the guy who played, you know, Bruce Banner, who turned into the Hulk, was Bill Bixby.
Eric Banner?
No, Bill Bixby. Dr. Banner, Bruce Banner. That was the guy that turned into the Hulk.
Right. So, okay, so they actually had different people that played that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it wasn't the same guy.
Bill Bixby, that's a great name.
Yeah, he was a long-time television actor.
Hmm.
Nice guy.
So,
at least he never got caught. Oh, and wow, we'd like to approach the bench and pay court costs.
All right.
Where was I?
I don't know. You started singing a little ditty about your best friend or something there, and I don't know where you went.
Well, we have on the docket today our good friends at BetterHelp. That's help, H-E-L-P.
And I think Tommy needs some better help today.
I need some help.
Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals?
Yes, cohesiveness.
Like the ability to stay on track?
That's right. BetterHelp will assess my needs and match me with my own licensed professional therapist.
And you can start communicating in under 24 hours.
It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's counselor network, which may not be locally available in many areas.
The service is available for clients worldwide.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy, watching reruns of The Courtship of Eddie's Father.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily at www.betterhelp.com/reviews/.
Visit betterhelp.com/court. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 700,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals.
And just like usual, there's a special offer for our court-appointed listeners. They get 10% off their first month when they join at betterhelp.com/court. Mike and Tommy want you to get better today.
Now, there have been some additional class action lawsuits brought against Apple from different iPhone users. One I thought had a very interesting name was talking about iPhone 7s and loop disease.
Loop disease?
Loop disease. It has to do with the sound card and the amount of sound emitted from the phone and the fact that sometimes the buttons are grayed out. And I don't know why it's called loop disease, but it's called loop disease, and it sounds like you might be able to catch it.
Well, it's like it goes into a loop.
Maybe.
You know how like something goes into a loop?
I'm not a scientist, Tommy.
He has loop dial dysfunction.
I'm just a simple lawyer.
That's what it sounds like. A loop dial disease. Yeah, a loop dial dysfunction. He's got a limp loop.
Do you suffer from EL? Another one dealt with the amount of radio frequency radiation that's emitted. So it's kind of a very interesting one. But in order to have a class action lawsuit under the federal rules of civil procedure, namely, old number 23, that's the rule it covers.
Michael Jordan?
No, it covers class action lawsuits in the federal rules of civil procedure.
Oh, you think that's a coincidence that was Michael Jordan's number?
It could be. Very well could be. There is certain things you have to meet if you want to have a class action to get it certified. And that's what it's called. Whenever you file a lawsuit and you want to have a class, you have to get it certified by the judge that it is a class.
How about codified?
Nope, not codified, just certified.
Bona fide?
Not bona fide, just certified.
Okay.
Now, the criteria is that you have to prove an adequate class definition, number one. Ascertainability, number two.
I think Beyonce's got that.
Well, you have to be able to ascertain who the class is.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to define the class and identify the class and ascertain all who it is.
All right.
There has to be numerosity, meaning there has to be a lot of people. There has to be commonality, meaning everyone has
similar, to know each other.
No, they have to have a similar or common claim.
The same last name.
Typicality, meaning they have to have typical claims. Adequacy, meaning that there has to be an adequate way they can recover. And at least one of the requirements in 23B, namely, separate adjudications will create a risk of decisions that are inconsistent with or dispositive others in class members' claims, meaning you could get inconsistent rulings.
Sure.
Declaratory or injunctive relief is appropriate based on the defendant's acts with respect to the class generally, B. Or C, common questions predominate a class, and a class action is superior to individual actions. So basically, there has to be a good reason why you want to have a class action. So if you meet that kind of criteria, then you can file a lawsuit and you can certify it and have a class action lawsuit against some sort of company, generally.
Well, here's the main reason that it's good is because most individuals would not stand a chance up against a company the size of Apple. So you need a million people that are all complaining about the same thing, saying it, to even get their attention or to have a chance in court.
That's true.
Because they would eat you up and spit you out with all their lawyers.
Well, and class actions catch a lot of flack for not really helping the consumer. And most likely, in the short term, they might not help the consumer that much.
They don't get that much money back. No. There's a million people, and they give them a $10 million judgment.
Yeah.
And then the lawyers take half of it, and they all get, what, $5 or whatever? Yeah.
The long-term effect of them can be seen as in a positive way, though, because it incentivizes larger companies to make sure they act in a certain way and they don't fall prey to these.
If the fine is big enough, but if it's 3 hours of profits, it's not big enough.
Yeah, well, there's never going to be a class action lawsuit where it's going to settle for $27 million. That wouldn't happen.
Good. Needs to be a lot more than that.
Yeah. I mean, it might happen given the certain circumstance, but I can't imagine if that was a class action lawsuit that some judge would approve a $27 million settlement for something that was...
Yeah, that was something the government enacted against them, the French government.
Class action lawsuits, the costs and consequences of them can motivate organizations. They have to spend a lot of money to cover their legal costs, and they have to have money to cover the court settlement, which can come out to be millions or billions of dollars. The ones that are billions really tend to get their attention. And also, there's their reputation or their brand can be permanently damaged by these class action lawsuits.
I don't think they care. Apple doesn't care. They'll take on those lawsuits.
Yeah, that's true. But if you think about, like, we've talked about the Ford Pinto cases before, that was something that really kind of hurt Ford for quite some time. So,
but they're back at it now. They're beating Ferrari.
They are. That was a really good movie, by the way.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it was good. So you had some other class action lawsuits that Apple's been involved with, I think, right?
Yeah, I went looking for other things they'd been involved with, and I was surprised at all the things they had. Apple was caught up in a controversy regarding the online sales of music in the European Union, where as a single market, customers are free to purchase goods and services from any member state. iTunes stores forced consumers and other music buyers to iTunes-only sites by restricting content purchases to the country from which the customer's payment details originated, which in turn forced users in some countries to pay higher prices. On December 3, 2004, the British Office of Fair Trading referred the iTunes Music Store to the European Commission for violation of European free trade legislation. Apple commented that they did not believe they violated the law, but were restricted by legal limits to the rights granted to them by the music labels and publishers.
Well, that's kind of a sticky situation for them, probably, because if they have certain restrictions through their iTunes, through the music they're allowed to distribute and where they're allowed to distribute it, then I could see where that might be quite a problem for them.
Well, do you really believe that, though?
Yeah.
I don't. I think they were just trying to take advantage of people, and this was their answer. They always have an answer.
That one, I would tend to buy that one a bit more than some of the other ones.
I'm not buying it.
Because if there's one group that is a bit more suspicious than Apple, it's probably the music industry. With their contracts.
Well, I think they're struggling because all their music is stolen.
You think that's the reason why?
Yeah.
I think it's because their business model maybe was not very effective in the future.
Another one was the Google Voice controversy. Apple had been criticized over attempting to prevent iPhone users from using Google Voice application by disabling it on the iPhone. Apple declined to approve the Google application for use on the iPhone, claiming that the application altered iPhone's intended functionality and that with Google Voice installation, voicemail is no longer routed to the iPhone's native application, Visual Voicemail. So this caused controversy among iPhone developers and users. The United States Federal Trade Commission began investigating Apple's active decision to deny users' ability to install Google Voice from the Apple Online Store, which is the only official way for users to download and install iPhone applications.
Yeah.
So they made them go through their store to sell it, and then they wouldn't sell it to anybody because they said you're not allowed to put it on.
That's one thing that Apple does. They keep their store very tightly constructed. The difference between Apple and Android is pretty much an open market. Anybody can upload any kind of app they want.
Right.
Whereas Apple controls it.
Everything. Yeah.
So,
well, evidently they stepped in the FCC and made them let it be available. So as of 2010, they were able to start using
it. Now, see, that's an excuse that Apple had. I'm not buying. That one doesn't make sense to me.
Well, they were just trying to do that. In May 2015, it was reported that U.S. Department of Justice and Federal Trade Commission was beginning to investigate Apple for engaging in a cartel with major record labels that discouraged them from offering free ad-supported streaming of their music online in order to push users towards a relaunch of the subscription-based Beats Music service. In particular, it was alleged that Apple had pushed labels to pull their music from the free freemium tier of competing service Spotify and offered to pay Universal Music Group the equivalent of the YouTube's licensing fee with the label in exchange for pulling its content from the service.
Yeah.
So they're working in collusion with these others to create a monopoly.
So they can take away what's free and then essentially make you have a subscription for it.
Right. Now, here's the way that their app store works, too, against you. iOS applications available through the App Store that require payments for features or memberships are required to use Apple's iTunes payment system, granting the company a 30% cut of all transactions. This policy has been criticized as taking an unreasonably large amount of money for each transaction, with comparisons being made to the typical 1% to 5% cut that credit card companies require and the 1% to 10% cut that some online marketplaces require.
Yeah, that's pretty excessive.
Yeah. And so they want to be able to not have to use it there.
Yeah, I don't use iTunes for anything. I hate iTunes. I think it's a horrible, horrible app.
Well, I listen to satellite music, so I don't really use it that much for it.
I use my Amazon Unlimited. I pay a subscription fee to that. Mm-hmm. I use their music streaming music service. But I listen to satellite quite a bit too.
Now, in November of 2015. Flux, for lack of a better way, it's a IT term. It's like F period LUX, a popular computer program for adjusting displays colors during nighttime to remove blue light that may affect sleep patterns, was made available for iOS devices through sideloading. Users install Xcode, a development environment for Mac computers, and manually install the app on their iOS device, bypassing the App Store and the official release channels that do not require permissions for Flux to work.
Uh-huh.
Well, they went in, Apple went in and shut all that down, and they said it's because they were come out with their own app. So they did. They came out with it. They implemented something called Night Shift.
Yeah.
That did the same thing, but it didn't do it as well. It got some of the blue light out, but not all of it as this other one did. So in essence, they were forcing you to use their product, and it was an inferior product.
I wonder, though, if they had any kind of intellectual property type issues from taking that idea from Flux and then...
Well, you know they probably stole it from them. They probably reverse engineered it.
I could have.
They got it, reverse engineered it, then offered their own. App Store compensation conflict. In 2012, a group of Chinese writers won compensation from Apple for selling apps that contained unlicensed versions of their books. They had sought 50 million yen, $7.7 million, and instead, in compensation, they were awarded only $160,400. And they were using their books without paying them for copyright or anything.
It's not a very good day in court.
Now, I've heard of this happening a lot, price reductions. Apple has been criticized for post-launch price reductions, most noticeably after the price of the original iPhone was cut by $200 just 2 months after its release.
Uh-huh.
So, like, you have to pay $1,000 if you want to rush in the store and get one. 2 months later, you can get them for $800.
Yeah.
And it's you know, your stores that are your, like, best, I mean, your people that are like your best customers, they want your new product and you're screwing them over. You're taking advantage of them. It said Apple worked to rectify the place by offering a $100 store credit to early iPhone customers who bought the iPhones from Apple or AT&T.
Well, that's also, that's a bit of kind of a free market capitalism type issue there. I don't really have a problem with that one as much.
Well, it's still underhanded practices for the almighty dollar when they're building their phones off of child labor and everything else, you know? It's like, where is the corporate responsibility?
Well,
where is the thing?
We're getting into that. That's a whole different topic.
I mean, that kind of ties into that I have to go along with people like the ones that talk about having a wealth tax. Because you have these billionaires that shelter all their money where they don't pay. They pay less taxes than you and me, and we're just common Joes. And they pay less taxes than us because they shelter all their money. Well, we can't do that. We don't have the resources to do that. But you know they have that money, so they should have to pay something. And I feel the same way with these companies. They have to declare their profits for dividends for stockholders and all that kind of stuff. So you see what kind of money they're making. I just think that we should say, look, this is the share you owe the government or you can't sell your devices here. I mean, as a citizen, you say, well, I don't want to lose my iPhone, but if you want to make the world a better place, we got to start somewhere. And I think they should be paying a lot of taxes that would relieve part of the problem we have in our budget problems.
But getting back to the original argument, I still think that they should be able to set the price for their own product that they're selling. If they want to drop the price 2 months later by $100 or $200, then I don't see that as being some sort of bad issue.
Well, so what we need to do is don't anybody rush out and buy the new phones.
Yeah.
Wait for them to drop the price.
I mean, in a free market, then that's exactly what would happen. They wouldn't offer them for so much. People didn't rush out and get them.
Well, I guess you're right. With regard to leaked information about new Apple products, Apple has been accused of pressuring journalists to release their sources, has filed lawsuits against unknown persons, John Doe's, to find out how their product information has been leaked, and has been chastised by the courts for doing so as an abuse of the legal discovery process. In particular, Apple fought a protracted battle against the Think Secret website that resulted in a positive solution for both sides. No sources were revealed.
Huh.
But another thing that they did, too, they headed up. There's some kind of group that they put together in the Silicon Valley that's supposed to fight hacking and, you know, with all the companies that are there and safeguard them and all this kind of stuff. They're mm-hmm. kind of one of the members of it that kind of headed up. They have used that position to target people that they think are infringing on things they want and to be able to gain access to their computers and their information and stuff like that so they can look at exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
So they've like accused them of hacking and doing different stuff, and so they can get in and get this information from them. So they've used their position for that. Safety problems and harsh working conditions. Workers who assemble iPhones, iPads, and other devices often labor under harsh conditions, according to employees inside the Foxconn plants. Apple suppliers in China have improperly disposed of hazardous waste and falsified records. 49 young men and women were poisoned at the Linjiang Technology Factory in Suzhou Industrial Park by the toxic chemical hexane, used to wipe clean the iPad display screens and speed up efficiency. To save money, the factory did not provide proper ventilation during the cleaning process, and workers developed neurological problems, the loss of motor function, numb limbs, and complained of constantly fainting and being overcome by debilitating fatigue. Some of these sick workers were eventually bought off with a lump sum payment of 8,000 or 9,000 yen, which is about $1,200 to $1,400.
Wow.
But only after signing an agreement stating they would not bring claims against Apple or its supplier companies in the future.
That's not good.
It said most of the workers there make about $100 per month, and they are required to live on the premises, pay for rent and food from the company. Their living expenses is a requirement of keeping the job, typically required that employees spend a little over half their earnings. The article also said that workers were given buckets to wash their clothes in. So they not only work in the factories, they live in the factories and are required to turn over half of their disposable cash, at least buying the products that are sold in the factory.
That sounds very similar to company stores for mines that you had.
Yeah, here. Back like in the old days, they paid with script. It wasn't even real money.
Yeah.
You use company script, and you could only spend it at the company store. Now, here's another thing. Foxconn's use of students and minors is part of its pursuit of low-cost, flexible labor. When the fallout of the 2010 suicides left Foxconn without a labor shortage, or with a labor shortage, the Henan provincial government assisted with the breach. The province directed 100,000 vocational students to staff the assembly lines as interns. after providing
that
them
sounds horrible.
I know, 100,000, and they had no choice. After providing them with 9 days' notice, students were told that those who failed to comply would not be allowed to graduate. Interns have become a significant component of Foxconn's labor force since then, constituting as high as 15% of the workforce, or 180,000 interns company-wide, at peak times making it the largest internship program in the world. Teachers have been stationed in the factory compound to monitor attendance, and some interns as young as 14 by the company's own admission, thereby violating U.S. and Chinese laws. And it says other similar manufacturers are covertly using interns to avoid culpability. The young people are hired through the same labor agencies that hire Foxconn's dispatch workers, who are deprived of standard benefits and protections. So they basically say, you're an intern, you don't have any rights, and treat them that way. The wages average from $1 to $2 an hour.
Yeah, and Foxconn, they do more than just Apple, though. They do a lot of different kinds of electronics. They've done BlackBerry, iPad, iPhone, iPods, Kindles, Nintendo 3DS, Nokia, PlayStations, PlayStation 4, Wii U, Xbox 360, Xbox One, different CPUs. They do all kinds of different.
Well, there again, in corporate responsibility, if that's the way that company is, nobody in the U.S. should do business with them to encourage that type of behavior. It said their Foxconn workers typically complete 50-hour work weeks and 12-hour shifts. However, work weeks of up to 100 hours are not unheard of during peak production periods. Foxconn workers typically cannot afford the iPads and iPhones they assemble. In 2009 and 10, the Foxconn factories industrial park were heavily criticized in the press, with one source describing conditions as a white-collar prison. Foxconn guards were videotaped beating employees. Said that in July of 2019, a Chinese factory worker committed suicide after reporting that he lost a prototype model for a fourth-generation iPhone. So rather than have to face what he was going to face for that, he committed suicide. It said upon filing his report, Chinese media reported that his residence was searched by Foxconn employees and that he was beaten and interrogated by his superiors, both actions that are illegal. An Apple spokesman told reporters the company was saddened by the tragic loss of the young employee. Later in April, four workers committed suicide in a single month in the same factory, signifying the beginning of the 2010 Foxconn suicides incident. By May 2010, 12 workers had committed suicide at Foxconn's operations in China. So, but something like that isn't enough to do away with doing business with them. And lastly, the thing that stuck out was their tax practices. And they use an accounting technique called double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. So there you go. You've talked about prosecuting a ham sandwich.
Yeah.
Well, this is double Irish with a Dutch sandwich.
That sounds pretty good. I'm kind of hungry. It's about dinner time.
It reduces taxes by routing profits through Irish subsidiaries and the Netherlands and then to the Caribbean. In 2004, Ireland, a nation of less than 5 million, was home to more than one-third of Apple's worldwide revenues, according to the company filings. The Apple controller in the mid-1990s called the strategy the worst-kept secret in Europe. Such strategies helped Apple keep its international taxes to 3.2% of foreign profits last year and 2.2% in 2010.
Yikes, that's pretty low.
It says, among the findings of the report when they investigated them, said Apple pays 2% or less in corporate income tax in Ireland. Ireland's standard rate of corporate income tax is 12.5%. Apple Operations International, which provides 30% of Apple's worldwide net profits, doesn't pay taxes anywhere. Apple's U.S. profits keep ending up in Ireland. Most of the $102 billion Apple is keeping overseas is in U.S. banks.
Huh.
I don't know how that works.
Well, they're routing it around, obviously. They figured out some sort of magical way to pay no taxes and make their money come all the way around full circle.
But somewhere, somebody needs to stand up to them.
Sounds like loop disease to me.
Yeah, we the consumer needs to give them loop disease to make them impotent.
Are you gonna lead the riots?
Yeah, I'll lead it. I don't mind. I'll stand up to them.
Well, that's
good. Give me iPhone freedom or give me death. That's Data Patrick Henry.
Did you say Data Patrick?
Yeah. That's an update of Patrick Henry.
Oh, an update of Patrick Henry.
Yeah, not a Data Patrick Henry.
I was like, what are you talking about?
That's what I got to update his saying. Give me liberty or give me death.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs, 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 Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms. I asked Tommy if he can remember what we talked about. We'll see how it goes.
No, probably not.
So,
I was too busy being angry at the man.
You were pretty angry today.
I am. Makes me mad to read all these misgiving things.
Under the table, you got a little soapbox your feet are resting upon.
That's right. It's always available.
You know what kind of soap it is?
Ivory.
Irish Spring.
Oh, and with a Dutch sandwich.
Irish Spring with a Dutch sandwich. That's the scent. So the first thing I want to ask you is, what controls determining class actions?
Well, there's a lot of things. There's like commonality.
No. That's the actual rule itself.
Oh.
Broadly, though, what controls it?
What controls it is it's... What controls it? Oh, it's some branch of the government?
It's the federal rules.
Well, there you go. Rule number 23.
That's right. I knew you were going to do number
23. Michael Jordan's number. That's right. I'd remember that.
Federal rules of civil procedure number 23 is what controls class action lawsuits.
Yeah.
Now, you're jumping the gun a little bit there.
Yeah.
What are the different things that, under Rule 23, the court looks at to determine whether or not to certify a class?
Well, it doesn't have to be bona fide or certified. No, it does have to be certified.
Yeah. It's got to be a class certification. That's what it's called.
And it has
not
to
codified,
be.
Not codified, certified.
You have to have typicality, and you have to have commonality.
Yep.
You don't need to have bestiality.
No, that's frowned upon. And illegal.
I thought I was making a shepherd's pie. I don't even know what that means.
I think it's continuing the line of Irish jokes, though.
It has to be something that it has to have helpinality. Whatever your remedy is, it has to help somebody. It has to be an actual...
Adequacy.
Yeah, it has to be an actual cure or something.
Yep.
There has to be numerosity.
It has to be a lot of people.
And there has to be viscosity so that you can slide right through there and get them.
Well, you hit a few of them there.
Yeah. There's a few of them coming to me here and there.
So it has to be adequate class definition. So you have to be able to figure out what the class is. You have to be able to define it, first of all. Ascertainability is the second one. You have to be able to ascertain or determine who's in this class. Mm-hmm. So you got to define the class. Then you got to be able to figure out who's in it. And once you figure out who's in it, there has to be numerosity.
Has to be a lot of you.
Has to be a lot of them. And once there's a lot of them, they have to have things in common. They have to have common problems.
And it has to be typical. It
has to be typical. And then there has to be an adequate remedy, like you said. And then there have to be certain requirements under the rule, too, that separate adjudications could have inconsistent verdicts. So,
right. One state might find for you and the other state might find again you.
That's true. And also that there's common questions that kind of predominate or flow through the entire action. So that is your class action lawsuit primer in a nutshell.
All right.
So, you actually did pretty good with that. That's a very difficult question because there's a lot of different little parts in there, and you actually just learned it in about, I don't know, 15 minutes?
Well, it was because the words I was cracking up at as you said the words because it sounded kind of funny. Well,
that's true. And we did talk about it before, so maybe some of that stuck from before.
Was it more than a week ago?
It was more than a week ago.
Then I don't remember it. It's gone.
It was probably a year and a half ago, I think. Maybe. I don't know. It's been a while.
Well, I don't know, but I know one thing. I want to get my taxes going where I've got a double shot of Irish cream and a Dutch sandwich. That sounds like a good lunch or something.
You can do the old Kansas City shuffle.
Yeah. As long as it's not a Cleveland steamer.
Alrighty then. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is binge watching. I will be the first to admit that I like watching TV way too much. I feel guilty about the millions of better ways to spend my time rather than staring at the boob tube, as it used to be referred to. Sometimes I watch something just because there is nothing else on and I don't even really have any interest in it, but it is just easy and brainless. Now, with the advent of DVR and streaming services, there is a cornucopia of things to watch both day and night, way more than I can even hope to ever see. Sometimes, I have so many things to catch up on, it's like having a second job. I have to get through this series tonight so that I can get started on another. You see, I like to finish one before I start a new one. My wife isn't tied to those kind of linear rules, however. She may be two or three episodes into one series and without a thought just launch into a different one. I say, "Did you not like the first series?" And she replies, "Oh yeah, a lot. But I heard about this one and thought we could start it too." I get confused when trying to keep up with too many storylines at the same time. Another problem my wife and I have in binge watching is that I love documentaries. She finds them boring. I like true crime and true stories, and she's not into any of that. So finding common ground to watch shows together is very hard. Back in the day when we only got 2.5 channels, there was not a lot of disagreement over what to watch, unless football was on. But now, with all the streaming services and genres and reality shows, there is no such thing as casually watching something. Watching TV these days requires a firm commitment. When we find a good series, I like to use it as a filler. Whenever we don't have something else on, we can pull up the next one of that series and fill whatever time we have and just enjoy it. I don't want it to run out because I enjoy the story or the characters or something. Not my wife. It's like cramming for exams and we have to keep watching no matter what. I will be there at midnight fighting falling asleep to get through an episode, and my wife has been asleep for the last 2 hours. I say, "Come on, let's go to bed," and she nearly falls off the couch and says, "No, no, let's watch one more." I say, "But you slept through the last two." And she says, "Yes, but I've caught my second wind and I'm ready now." Begrudgingly, I start the next episode, and 3 minutes later, she was back sound asleep. Me being me, I now have to watch this entire episode because I started it. I have to now finish it because that is what I do. Binge watching TV is hard. I consider it my second job, though it is an unpaid job. I don't do it because I want to. I do it because I have to. All that content is there, just begging me to watch it. So I have no other choice. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.